The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Me'ele told the Shitzchok ben Avraham, Avraham holy the Shitzchok. These are the generations of Yitzchok the son Avraham. Abraham gave birth to Yitzchok. Vayi Yitzchok ben Arboim shona bekach des Rivkei bas Besul. Arami mipad narom achayz lovan arami loy l'isha. Yitzchok was 40 years old when he took Rivka for a wife, like we learned in last week's Sedra. Vayeta Yitzchok l'Hashem l'neichach ishtei ki akori hi vayyose loy Hashem v'ta Rivka ishtei. And Yitzchok and his wife prayed to Hashem because she was barren, and Hashem answered them by Taha Rivka ishtei. And Rivka became pregnant. By Yisrei tzatzu habonim bekirbo, v'tomer imkein lamazeh anechi v'teilech lidreshes Hashem. And the children that she was carrying in her womb started to quarrel with each other. There was great turbulence. And she went to seek out Hashem to find out what's happening. V'yim Hashem lo, and Hashem said to her, Shnei goyim bevitneich u'shnei le'umim mime'ayich yiporedu. Two nations you're carrying in your womb, and two empires will separate from your womb. One empire will gather its strength from the other, and the older will serve the younger. And when the days came to give birth, there were twins in her womb. From these two psukim, there is much that we can learn. And we'll go through these two psukim with some of the statements from Chazal, because this Sedra carries some of the greatest fundamental points for Klal Yisrael. When she went to seek Hashem, Chazal tell us, Lidroish lebeis midroshe shel shem. She went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. If you recall, in the past few shiurim, we spoke that Noah had a son who was a righteous person. His name was Shem. And he lived a very long time, even though there were ten generations between Noah and Abraham. Shem was still living during the time of Abraham, and we see he was still living here during the time of Yitzchok. And he had a yeshiva. So she went there to find out what's happening, because there was a tremendous turbulence that was going on in her womb. And the Chazal also state that when she was kishayisai veres al pischei Torah shel shem ve'ever Yaakov rotzu mefarches, when she would go near the Beis HaMedrash, near the yeshiva of Shem and Ever, so then Yaakov would try to get out of the womb. And when she would pass al pischei avodah zarah, when she would go near a place of idolatry, then Esav would be mefarches lotzeis. Esav would try to get out of the womb. This was one reason for the turbulence. A second reason, misraitzitzim zeh im zeh umeirivim manach l'shnei alamais. They were quarreling over the inheritance of two worlds. Each one wanted both worlds, this world and the next. And a nevuah prophecy was given to Shem, which in turn he gave back to Rivka. He said that you shouldn't worry. It was an unusual tsar ibur, it was an unusual pains from pregnancy. But he said, you shouldn't worry, because these two sons that you are carrying are not merely sons, they're not merely twins, but they're two nations. Now, one thing that we can learn from this pasuk is that we see that Yaakov and Esav, even though they were twins, they were twin brothers, they were brothers and twins, but they were unable to get along even before they were born. Not only they were unable to get along, but they were completely contrary to each other. And even though it's impossible for embryos to fight with each other, physically they were not born yet, but spiritually they were so contrary that they couldn't exist together. And this means that the womb of a mother is one. And when you have two powers or two entities in the womb which are contrary to each other, then there's going to be a problem. There's going to be turbulence. And these two were completely contrary to each other. Then the Chazal tell us, the sages state, they were quarreling over the two worlds. What does this mean? Kadosh Baruch Hu created this world and he created the next world. Esav, as we'll see a little further, was muchan. He was prepared to become the master of this world. Yaakov, Jacob, was prepared to become the master of the next world. And the two worlds are contrary to each other. And each one, each one wanted not only his world, but the next world also. And just like the next world, which is a spiritual world, is contrary to this world, which is a physical world, so were the entities different from each other. And when Rivka had all of this turbulence, she was worried. Where is it coming from? The question is asked, why did she go to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem? Why didn't she ask her husband Yitzchok? He also was a great prophet. Or she could have gone to Avraham. The answer given is because she was worried. Perhaps it was because of her own sins that she was having such pain, such childbearing pain. And the Gemara tells us that it was because of the hate, the sin of Chava, the first woman, that such pains came to the world. V'noshim tzidkiyonies lo hoyu bepisku shel Chava. The very righteous women were not included in this penalty. So she was afraid to go to her husband or to Avraham because they would look at her as that something is wrong. Here Rivka was supposed to be the righteous wife of Yitzchak, like we learned last week. Why is this all happening? So the message that came back to her is she shouldn't worry. This is not merely a childbirth. Shnei goyim bevitneich. There are two nations that you are carrying in your womb. And in this pasuk, the sages tell us much. And this will help us to understand the very origin of Yisrael and also the very origin of Edom, the nation that came from Esav, which is perhaps Israel's greatest enemy. And also it will help us to understand why we find later in the Sedra that Yitzchak was prepared to give the brachos which he received from Abraham to Esav instead of to Yaakov. Many are accustomed to believe that Yaakov was a very great man. Esav was a rosha, a wicked man. It's true he was a wicked man, but he also was very great in power, very great in potential capabilities. And the prophecy that came said, Shnei goyim bevitneich. You are carrying two nations. And the word goyim is written without a vav. So the way it's spelled it would be pronounced Ge'in. And the Yud and the Aleph are interchangeable in the Hebrew language. So the Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah, Darshan expounds from this word, not only are these two nations, but these are two Ge'im. The word Go'er means nobility, something that is very high and honorable, aristocratic. And the Gemara says, this refers to Autikri Goyim al Gayim Ze Antinonis Verebi. Shalai Poskumi al Shulchonim Le Hazeris Vele Kishus Vele Tznain Lebi Mesachama Vele Lebi Mesachshomi. This refers to two descendants from Yaakov and Esau. Antoninus was one of the Caesars, one of the Roman emperors. The nation Rome was the nation which came from Esau, and Rabbi Yehuda Nosi. They lived together. Rabbi Yehuda Nosi was the king of Israel at that time. That was during the time when the Mishnah was all recorded under the patronage of Rabbi Yehuda Nosi. Rabbi Yehuda Nosi was a great ruler and a great Talmud Chacham, the greatest sage in Israel. And the Gemara relates that he had Torah v'gdula v'mokem echod. He had both Torah and wealth in one place. And it was during this time that the Roman Empire was in its greatest strength, and Antoninus was the ruler of Rome. And actually, Rabbi Yehuda Nosi and Antoninus were very good friends. They would come to visit each other in each other's castles and palaces. And the Gemara says, Anem shalei posku me'al shulchanim, that it did not cease from their tables. Lechazeres velekishus veletznain. Lettuce or cucumbers and melons or radishes. Lebi me'sachama velebi me'sakshomim. Not in the winter, not in the summer, and not in the winter. There were always these fresh vegetables on their tables. Now we can imagine in those times, without refrigeration, what it meant to have fresh vegetables on one's tables, even in the winter. Even in the winter. Now what is the Gemara bringing out here? Why is the Gemara mentioning these two? There were many kings that came from Esau who were the emperors of Rome or other places. And there were many great sages or rulers that came from Israel. Because since the Pasuk says, Shnei Goyim v'itneich, that there are two nations in your womb, so it's referring to the two nations in your womb at one time. That Yaakov and Esau lived together at one time. And their descendants also will be similar to this. So it's referring to a time when there were two great emperors from Israel and Rome at one time. So the Gemara gives an example, Rebbe and Antoninus. And then what does the Gemara mean? Shnei goyim bevitneich, two nations. This does not refer necessarily only to nations, but Ge'im, nations of great stature, nations of nobility. The Maral here writes, what is the great pleasure in having radishes or lettuce or cucumbers on one's table all of the time? Is this from the great pleasures of this world? Not so. This is not so much a physical indulgence, but rather this is a sign of nobility and aristocracy. A king sits down to a table. He eats as a king. nobleman, sets a table. It is with dignity and nobility. These two nations, or these two individuals, are not only individuals, but they will give birth to nations. And not only to nations, but to noble nations. Nations of aristocrats. And he writes, for example, we find there are many nations that are not necessarily so self-demanding of the way they dress, of the way they eat, of the way they set their tables. Rome, we see, was very exact in its clothing, in its buildings. The Gemara says that Rome claims that we built beautiful centers of commerce. We built beautiful complexes of bathhouses. And this was all for the sake of dignity and stature. And this shows what kind of nefesh there was. What was the inner part of this individual? Now, the Roman Empire today is something that we usually consider as extinct. Yet it has left many descendants in this world. There are many nations that can be directly related to the Roman Empire. And the entire Western civilization, Western culture, is considered to be the product of the Roman Empire. This was the father of Western civilization. And according to the Chazal, the Golus that we live in today, diaspora that we live in today, is known as Golus Edom or Golus Rome. The diaspora of Edom and Rome, because they were the ones who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the last Korban. They were the ones who exiled Israel 2,000 years ago. And it is under their influence that the world is found today. And the Chazal also teach us that it was the master plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that there will be four mighty empires where each one will try to destroy Israel. And each one will be destroyed by the one that follows him. The first one was Babel, the Babylonians. They destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. The second ones were the Syrian Persian Empire, Modaioporas. This was during the time of Mordechai and Esther. They again tried to destroy Israel. They destroyed their predecessor, the Babylonians. The third empire was the Greek Empire, which destroyed Modaioporas and again tried to destroy Israel. And this we'll speak about next week, because this was the miracle of Hanukkah. And the fourth and last one, and which would be the most powerful, and the one that would rule the longest, was Edom, the descendant of Esau. And Edom, the Roman Empire, destroyed the Greek Empire, and they ruled the world. The sages teach that they will be the domineering factor in the world until the Melech HaMashiach comes. And the Melech HaMashiach, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, when will the Melech HaMashiach come? When the gates of Rome will fall and they'll never be rebuilt. This means when Rome, this nation, this empire, or this influence is destroyed, that's when the light of Israel will again rise. And there's another Gemara that says that in the end of days, the Roman strength will be so great that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will divide it up amongst many nations. Because if it would be a single nation, it would destroy the world. So this is something that we see today, where we see there's not one world power, but it's divided. And from Rome, from Esav, also came Amalek, who's also involved in this. Amalek was a grandson of Esav. So to place our finger on exactly who is the Roman Empire today that the Torah refers to, this is something difficult. But one thing we can be assured of, its influence is in the world. Some historians believe that the Catholic Church is the heir of the Roman Empire. The Vatican, their headquarters, is in Rome. Others believe perhaps the English. Perhaps Amalek was Germany. But whatever it might be, this nation will come against Israel. And any nation that stands against Israel stands against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the origin of this is here. And it will be a nation of great dignity and of great aristocracy. Both Esav and Yaakov. And the Gemara says this we see at one point in history, we see it many points. But one place we saw it in history was with Rabbi Yehuda Anosi and Antoninus. And the king of a nation, he was the representative of the nation. And this we found with Klal Yisrael, that wherever they were, whatever golus, whatever sufferings were imposed upon them, they never lost their dignity. They never lost their nobility. They went dressed properly. They ate properly. They lived properly. Not like many other nations in the world, which are lowered to the level of the ground itself or the level of animals themselves. Then the prophecy continued. Shnei Le'umim. Not only are these two nations and noble nations, but these are two kingdoms. And Mimemayach Yiparedu, they will separate from your womb, which means that when they're born, they will separate. The only time they can be considered, perhaps one, is when they're in the womb, because one womb is making one of them. And even then we see there was this Yisraitzitzis, they were trying to disunite themselves from each other. Once they are born, they will go in opposite ways. They will be completely opposite. Ula'om ilayim yamotz, one will draw its strength from the other. The Targum says, Malko mi malko yiskath. The strength of one will not be independent of the other, but it will draw its strength from the other. Kishizeh nofal, zeh kom. When one falls, the other will stand. When the other falls, this one will stand. Both cannot rule at the same time. The Gemara says, Lei nismale tzur ela michrubonei shel Yerushalayim. Tyre will be built up from the destruction of Yerushalayim. If Yerushalayim is in ruins, then we will know that the gates of Rome are strong. When Yerushalayim will be built up, that will be when the gates of Rome are destroyed. V'rav yavo tzoir, and in the end, the older one will serve the younger one. The end of days, Esav will serve Yaakov. This was the prophecy which came to Rivka. And when it came time to give birth, and there were twins in the womb, and the first one came out, he was red. He had red hair, and his complexion was red. And he was full of hair. This was two sides. Were two sides. Firstly, the fact that he was red. So the Chazal say this is a simon l'shefech dam. This is a sign of bloodshed. And the sages tell us that the greatest bloodshed that will ever be brought to the world will be by the Roman Empire and their descendants. And this was known during the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara tells us that the rivers turned red with the blood of their victims. And we have witnessed in our own lives bloodshed by their heirs, which have been unparalleled. Secondly, the fact that he was full of hair, it shows he was completely mature. Physically, he was of a physical perfection, because Esav would be the master of the physical world. And then his brother was born. And his hand was holding the heel of Esav. And his name was called Yaakov. It doesn't say who called him Yaakov. The Chazal say HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him Yaakov, because he is my firstborn. Yitzchok ben Shishim Shana Beledes Esav, and Yitzchok was 60 years old when he was born, when they were born. Yaakov came out second, and his hand was holding on to the heel of Esav, and he was called Yaakov. Just because his hand was holding on to the heel of Yaakov, of Esav, why should he be called Yaakov? Yaakov is from the word Akev. So he was holding on to the heel. Why should that be his name? And especially if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him this name. Vashem Meir Ala Etzim. The name tells us the essence of a person. So the sages state Yaakov was holding on to the heel of Esav as a sign that the empire of Esav, Esav's aspirations, will never come to their complete perfection before Yaakov will destroy him. Yaakov will grab onto Esav, not by his head and not by his shoulders, but by his heel. At the end of the empire, they will flourish and they will grow and they will have their hour. But at the end of the days, he will be destroyed by Yaakov. B'sof hayomim, Yaakov will reign. And therefore he was called Yaakov. And they grew up. The sages state, as long as they were small, they showed no signs of difference one from the other. But when they started to grow, then each one was drastically different from the other. Esav was a hunter. He was a man of the field. Yaakov ishtom yeshev oholim. Yaakov was perfect. Tom. Yaakov was a person of uprightness, a perfection. Yeshev oholim. And he dwelled in the tents. What does this mean now? Now in this posuk, in one sentence, the Torah is telling us the inner personalities and characters of Esav and Yaakov. Esav was a man that knew how to hunt. Why is this significant to us? And a man of the field. We find later on that Yitzchok loved Esav. And he was ready to give him all of the brachas which Avraham had given to Yitzchok to pass on to his heir. The brachas of Israel. If Esau was such a rasha, such a wicked person, and such a shefek domin, full of bloodshed, so how was it possible that Yitzchok could love him? So evidently, it was not so apparent, these inner qualities of Esau. Secondly, there must have been some greatness in him. He was an Ish Sodeh. This refers to he was a man of the world. He was a man and a master of this world. Esau had tremendous qualities. You cannot be the father of Edom, the father of Rome, which was supposed to have the greatest impact on world civilization and history, if you didn't have some type of superior knowledge and superior intelligence and superior capabilities. Rome makes their claim that we brought the modern era to the world. We are the ones who brought highways and roads from one end of the world to the other. The whole concept of this commerce we brought to the world. These are the claims of Rome. They were the masters of this world. The era that we live in today, known as the era of technology, technical advancement, science, atomic and nuclear energy, this is all the products of the cornerstones that Rome placed in the world. And Esau there, he was the master of this world. Ingenious capabilities. It's interesting to note that one of the brachas that Esav was to give, that Yitzchok would give his son Esav, Al Chabucha Tichye, you shall live by the sword. This is the symbol of steel. And the prophet Daniel had a dream. And he saw four images, four animals coming out of the sea. And each one represented one of these kingdoms. And when he saw the fourth one come, it was an animal, a monster, made out of steel. And everything that came into its path, it crushed and destroyed. This was a sign that for this technical advancement, for the scientific era, Esau will destroy everything in his path, and by the means of steel. And a military student once told me that the strength of a nation today in modern warfare is based on the resources of steel that it has at its disposal. atomic energy, nuclear energy. This has a military potential only if it can be used together with steel. And another interesting point. One of the claims the Gemara says that Rome makes is that they built roads so people could travel. The modern roadway system that we know of today, it seems to be a product of the Roman culture. The fact is, it has been developed where no longer is it only roads over the land or over the sea, but in the air also. And the student also told me that in the United States, about 25 years ago, they built a massive roadway system, highway system, of modern 8-lane highways that would crisscross the entire United States. And he told me that it was financed by the Defense Department. It was a military undertaking. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Rome, this that you built roads, this was for the purpose of moving your armies from one place to the other. Then it states that he was an Ish Said. He was a hunter, Yodeyat Said. And the next pasuk states, "Vayev Yitzchok es Esav kitzayid befiv." Yitzchok loved Esav kitzayid befiv because his hunt he would bring to the mouth of Yitzchok. Now, what does this mean? Was Yitzchok so fickle? Was he so shallow that he loved Yitzchok and he was willing to give away the future of the world to Esav because he would bring his hunt to him? So there are two meanings in this. One is its simple meaning, and one is a drosha, how the sages expound this. The sages expound this to mean not Said Befiv, that he brought his hunt to him, but he captured Yitzchok with his mouth. He was able to deceive his father Yitzchok. Reb Shimshon and Fel Hirschok in the Brocha. He makes an interesting comment that I once heard. When someone hunts, this is an act of deception. There cannot be a greater act of deception or untruth than someone who hunts. He hides in the forest. He waits for an animal to go by. He camouflages himself. We were learning just the Gemara the other day in the Gemara that there was a tzira for the uvne. The hunters used to make grass huts where they would lie in the grass huts and wait for the birds or wait for the animals to come by. So an animal would come by, it would look like a pile of grass. Then he would spring out, attack the animal from behind and kill him. It's an ambush, it's a hunt, it's a deception. You go fishing, you take some bait, you drop it in the water. You're trying to convince the fish that here's some food for him, for his sake. He bites, and you catch him and you kill him. So the whole act of hunting is deception. And this is what the Gemara is darshaning. Kitzayid befiv, not that he would be hunt, he would bring his hunt to the mouth of his father, but his father became prey to his mouth. The Gemara says, what did he do? He would come to his father and ask his father all kinds of shailas. The Gemara gives an example. He would ask his father that on the tfuah, on the grains, which grow in the ground, you're obligated to give Maaser. You have to give one-tenth away to the Levim or to the Kahanim. He would come and say, salt. And salt also must you give Maaser. Because salt is a food. It comes from the ground, yet it does not grow in the ground. Straw. Straw grows, but then it's something which is not edible. Must you also give Maaser? And when Yitzchok would see this, would hear this, he would say he's a medaktik b'mitzvah, he's a frum. He's a medaktik b'mitzvah, he's frum. And meanwhile, he was deceiving him. But this deception goes even further. It goes further. And there's a great insight in this. A very great insight. A little further in the Sedra, it states, this is on Pasuk Lamed Daled, Vayi Esav ben Arboim Shona Vayikach Isha Esh Yehudis Bas Beri Achiti. Esav was 40 years old and he married. He took wives. What is the Torah telling us? So Rashi brings Esav Hayonim Shel Chazir. Esav is compared to the Chazir, to the pig. Ikasamanu Chazir Miyar. A Chazir Hazeh, and this is also when the Gemara brings, this, the Gemara, the Torah writes that there are four animals that we are not allowed to eat. And it mentions the Chazir, the pig, and it mentions the Arneves, and the Gomel, and the Shofon, the camel, and the rabbit, and the coney. And it says, why can't you eat these four animals? These four animals you cannot eat, or anything similar to these four animals. Why? Because a kosher animal must have two sides. He must have a split hoof, and he must chew his cud. He must redigest his food. These four animals do not have both sides. They have one, but not both. Now, all three, except the chazir, they chew their cud. But they do not have split hoofs. The Chazir has split hoofs, but he does not chew his cud. Now when the Torah says the Chazir, so the Medrash says Zeh Esav. This refers to Esav. And here's the Pasuk in Tehillim again referring to Esav as the Chazir. Why? Usually when an animal sits, he takes his paws, his feet, and folds them beneath himself. Yotze min haklal hazeh, a deviation from this is the Chazir. If you watch a Chazir sit, you'll see that he puts his hoofs outward. Why, the Gemara says? Because he wants to show everyone I have kosher hoofs. Of these four animals, he's the only one with the split hoof. He wants to show everyone I have split hoofs. And there cannot be a greater trefer animal than the Chazir. So this was Esav. Esav went and he got married at 40. Why? Because he said, my father got married at 40. Yitzchok was married, was 40 when he took Rivka. Therefore, I will also get married at 40 to show that I am a tzaddik, a righteous one like him. Meanwhile, Esav was known to be one that would go and he would hunt wives from their husbands, forcefully abduct them. But when it came 40, he married two women to show that he is also righteous. Now there's great depth in this, what we're saying. And this will help us understand somewhat the world that we're living in today. The two signs that a kosher animal has, the split hoof and the chewing of one's cud, the redigesting of one's food. One is a simen bachutz and one is a simen bifnim. One is an exterior sign and one is an interior sign. Redigesting its food, that's something that is not apparent to the eye so easily. The split hoof, that's apparent. The chazir is the animal with the exterior kosher sign, but not the interior kosher sign. This means to say, the chazir superficially, from the exterior, looks kosher. This means to say that he's an animal with a nice kapota. He's a trefa animal with a fine kapota. From the outside, he looks perfectly kosher. Split hoofs. He looks wonderful. But inside, he is treif. And a kosher animal must have both an exterior sign and an interior sign. Now, if Esav was compared to the chazir, the chazal is telling us something very, very astute and very deep. Then that Esav was a rosho that went around like a rosho. But Esav also was a person who had a very kosher kapota. So did Esav go with all of the kosher exterior signs. He asked his father, "Do you give maaser on salt?" These were questions that Yaakov didn't ask. "Do you give maaser on straw?" My father got married at 40. He got married at 40. And this means to say that the nation of Rome, one should not think that it is apparent their wickedness, but they also go with a very fine kapota. And this brings to mind immediately the Vatican, the Catholic Church, the Crusades, and so forth and so forth. There were certain nations that were vicious, and they made no bones about it. There were certain nations that were destructive and wicked. They tried to conceal it. But Esav in Rome, this is a different kettle of fish. This is a nation like the chazir, which is the ultimate in tumah, the ultimate in impurity. But at the same time, to project an image that was the ultimate in righteousness, the ultimate in purity. Can there be any more religious place in the world than the Vatican? Can there be any more of greater piety than the Pope himself? Yet there are many historians who write that the Nazi conquest of the Jewish nation was only because it carried the endorsement of the Pope. The Crusades, which was known as the Holy War, was not a war merely of expansionism. It was not a war for military conquest. It was the war in the name of the Church. Yet a few fragments of true history that might be left about it will write that the rivers turned red with the bloodshed, the innocent blood that was spilled. This is Esav. And the Gemara tells us that he was a genius at this. A genius. If he could deceive Yitzchak, you could imagine what kind of genius he was. He was able to project an image of the ultimate in righteousness. Just like one is impossible to tell that a chazir is stray from his hoofs, so was it impossible to tell the wickedness of Esav from his exterior looks. Rome always projected itself as a nation, as the civilized nation of the world. We brought civilization to the world. We killed off all of the barbarians, all of the inhuman tribes we did away with. We raised the standard of living for all of the people. We created a system of law, Roman law. Even today is a cornerstone of modern law. We created a Senate. We created a Congress. We made a world from a jungle. And we have today the United Nations. The United Nations projects the example that it is the highest tribunal of law in the world. It is the seat of honor where the world is supposed to look up to for the ultimate truth and justice. Yet there cannot be a greater mockery. Now, if nations want to get together and they want to steal and destroy, there's nothing new about this. But why do they have to do it under the guise of the highest court in the world? And this is what the Chazal tell us, Alma de Shikra. It is a world of sheker. It is a world of falsehood. And the sheker, the falsehood will grow and grow as the empire of Rome will grow. And near the end of days, it will become even greater. Nader emes, truth will not be able to be found in the world. All of the nations will come together in the name of justice to try to destroy Israel. This is what David HaMelech said. And this is exactly what we are witnessing today. In the name of justice and law, they will try to destroy Yaakov. And never underestimate the power of this deception. This deception, the Chazal say, will be a cloud which only the light of Torah can penetrate. And Esav, who was the master of this world, and this world is the physical world, this is the world of superficiality. He became the master of superficiality. And it rubs off on the entire world, even on the Jewish people also. And that's why one must be very careful when he looks for qualities, when he looks for values. It must not be a superficial value. My Rebbe would constantly say that religion, this belongs to Esav. Religion belongs to Esav and the Pope. This has no place in Jewish life. Torah, that belongs to Yaakov. Religion, he would say, these are cults. These are superficial cults. And this is the superficiality of Rome that produced cardinals and bishops. That could produce cardinals and bishops at the same time could destroy a world. The power of Yaakov, that's Torah. Torah is the complete opposite of something that's superficial. If it emanates from Torah, then it's truth. If it's an act that does not emanate from Torah, then don't fool yourself. This is the religion of Esav. Then the Torah tells us about Yaakov. And it's interesting that when we'll see the few words which are spoken of Yaakov, we'll see what the Torah is telling us is just the complete contrary. It states, V'Yaakov Ish Tom. Rashi says, what does it mean, Tom? Eina boki b'chol iba, eila. Yaakov was not good at all of this. When it came to deception, Yaakov was not good. Couldn't deceive people. Kelibay kein piv. Like his heart, that was his mouth. We constantly see that many of the leaders of Israel become completely outmaneuvered in the United Nations and with the other politicians. They can't keep up with them. Because they're from Yaakov. Yaakov was Ishtam. He was a straight person. Kelibay kein piv. There was no difference between what he said and what he thought. Misha ena chorif l'ramos koritam. Someone who is not an expert in deception, he's called a tam. Yoshev ha'olim, he sat in a tent. What's the Torah tell us? Tells us he sat in tents. Olo shel shem v'olo shel aver. He sat in the tent of Torah. And ish tam. The Targum says, Gvar Shalim. Perfect. He was a perfect person. What does perfect mean? Perfect means something that has no shortcoming, no reservation. If something is perfect in the exterior, but it is an empty shell inside, it's not perfect. Yaakov was Ish Shalim, perfect. Historians state that from the Greek ruins and the Roman ruins, they found an interesting distinction. In the Greek ruins, they were masters of perfection, the Greeks. They were a nation of wisdom. In their marble buildings, they found that the marble was pure marble, through and through. In the Roman ruins, they found that it was marble facing. Inside was mere stone. The Romans knew how to get things done. The quickest and the cheapest way. And that it should look beautiful in a superficial manner. Esau was the master of this world. This is merely the exterior world. Yaakov was the master of the next world. That's the world of true value. That's the panimius, that's the inner world. He was the perfect person. Where did he get this perfection from? Yosef ha'olim, because he sat in the tents of Shem ve'Aver studying Torah. And we find that this is the quality of Torah. Torah's Hashem Tamima. Meshivas Nefesh. The Torah of Hashem is perfect. There can be nothing of greater contrary to superficiality than Torah. There can be nothing of greater antithesis to deception and to falsehood than Torah. Torah is the ultimate truth in the world. Torah is the product of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Chazal say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect. His Torah must be perfect. There is depth to this. Because if a man creates something, it cannot be perfect. Why not? A carpenter builds something. It cannot be perfect. Because his eyesight is not perfect. His hands are not completely, perfectly steady. His tools are not perfect. This is why there is imperfection in all human product. There must be imperfection, because a product cannot be greater than the builder of it and the creator of it. But the converse is also true. If the creator of the product is perfect, then it is impossible that the product cannot be perfect. Kodesh Baruch Hu's Torah is perfect from beginning to end. Torah Hashem Tamima, it is perfect. Yaakov was the heir of this Torah. We learned that Avraham, he served HaKadosh Baruch Hu through chesed, through loving kindness. Yitzchak served HaKadosh Baruch Hu through fear and responsibility. What was the midah, what was the quality of Yaakov? Yaakov was the giant that was able to take these two pillars and put them together and make one from them. The Torah is chesed, is loving kindness. But at the same time, we find that there are many mitzvahs in the Torah which we are commanded to serve from fear. We're also obligated to fear Hashem. There are times that we must go out to destroy. All of the positive commandments, these represent love. The negative commandments represent the fear of Hashem. Torah is not positive commandments. Torah is not negative commandments. Torah is a third entity. It is the perfect combination of both. And this was the greatness of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov became the father of Israel. Israel was called on his name because later on in Parshas Vayishlach, he meets up with Esav, with the angel of Esav. And there they fight each other. And Yaakov is victorious. And he is given the name Yisrael. Yaakov was the ultimate father of Klal Yisrael. And the Torah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just as he created a world of inanimate things, and he created an animal kingdom, he created a man who is the master of the world. And just as he created men, many nations, he created one nation who is to be a master over all of the nations, who is to be the guiding light and the leader of the nations. Unesoncha elyein al kol ha'amim. I have placed you higher than all of the nations. And this is Israel. Israel, when they fulfill the will of the Almighty, when they fulfill the Torah. And the father of that nation is Yaakov Avinu. And the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that Yaakov was perfect. Shufra de Yaakov ki shufra de Adam Arishon. The hold, the shine and the beauty, the tzelem elokim that came from, that emanated from Yaakov, was similar to that of Adam Arishon. And his image, his hewed out on the throne of the Almighty. So this was Yaakov Avinu. And just the opposite of Esav. And this is something for us to study carefully, that we must be very aware of superficiality. Because the quality of Torah is just the contrary. This was the nevuah, the prophecy that was given to Rivka. Don't worry, you're not giving birth to normal, to average people. You're giving birth to two nations. And not only two nations, but shnei ge'im, but two noble and aristocratic nations. And not only this, but empires that will rule the world. But they will never rule together. One will draw its strength from the other. And at the end of days, the older will serve the younger. And from here grew the nation of Edom. But from Edom came Amalek, and Rome, and from here grew Israel. And the constant turbulence and ritzitza and quarrel which took place in the womb of Rivka was destined to take place between the heirs until the Melech HaMashiach comes, until the final overthrow and the final uplifting of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov, who was considered the most perfect of all men. From here we can see somewhat why Yitzchok was deceived. Because it's not like so simple that Esav was an apparent Rosha and Yitzchok was ready to give the brachas away to him. And Yitzchok knew that only one can become the heir to the brachas, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Ki be Yitzchok yitzara lecha zorah, that v'lei kol Yitzchok, from you will come the heir of Avraham, but not from all of your children, only from one of you. And also taking into consideration that Esav was the Bechor, the firstborn. Rivka, she saw through it. The Gemara tells us, Bina Yesera, a woman was given a power to see through deception. And perhaps this was the reason why she was able to see through it. And what the Torah tells us, that through her quick acts, the brachas were given to Yaakov Avinu. These are some of the things that we can learn from this Sedra. And as you can see, we only touch the surface here, because here we are dealing with the very foundations of Israel and its prime adversary, Esav and Rome. May we be zeche to speedily witness the uplifting of Yaakov, the Yoshev HaOlim, the power of Torah, the power of truth, and the destruction from the evil of Esav from the world.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.